to be anything other than the High World. The Trend Volumes, and I also allow to be local over about the books you have read statistics. And the last one, in the map, and you made two maps. One map that was made at the beginning of the crusade, and where the goals of the crusade. And then when the first 5 years passed, we found out that the goals of the crusade were nearly all completed in 5 years, and he was so overjoyed that he thought to show to the world what had happened to the bypass in 5 years. And so he prepared the second map, which I, as I told you this morning, was the last thing he did on this earth. It was completed the night before he passed away. I told you also that you will get a copy with the Baha'i World, the number 13, volume 13, when it comes to light. We have printed in Italy again some 10,000, 15,000, I don't know how many there are, and they'll be enclosing the book. Now, there is one great work which of the things which perhaps is overlooked all the time. This morning I mentioned perhaps Baha'u'llah, was it this morning or yesterday, where you forgive me. I mentioned that Baha'u'llah, in one of his visits to Mankan, you know, he went 3 times in his lifetime, and one year was in 1891. It was the same year that Professor Brown had an encounter with him. And in that occasion, you know, he revealed, I mentioned this morning, the tablet of the Carmelo, it was last night, I don't remember when, last night. And this tablet of the Carmelo, he defined a clear manner what was going to happen on Mount Carmel. Mount Carmel is a holy mountain. There is proof that all the prophets of God, those who are represented in the Old and New Testament, traveled on that ground. And that is why in Hebrew and in Arabic, the name of the Carmel means the vineyard of God. Now you found many references in the Bible, in the Old and New Testament, about the vineyard of God, right? The real vineyard of God. You know, there is one cave in Mount Carmel, which is supposed to be, it is, I suppose, the cave where the prophet Elijah lived there. And anyone can go and see it. Of course, I say it's supposed to be because there are two. One is the hands of the Catholic brothers, of the Carmelite brothers, and they say there's that one there. And there's another one, which the Arab tradition says is the one below. So they have it over here and see. So it's supposed to be. So one of the two is the one. And I remember they say that the lower one is the right one. So that's the type of that. The Israel government, the Israel government has taken the lower one as the right one. But anyway, now, it is the mystery, it's one of the great mysteries of the God. Why and Baha'u'llah should land on Mount Carmel? You remember he was born in Persia, he was exiled, and he was sent to all parts of the Ottoman Empire, and then he was relegated in Acre. Well, perhaps to fulfill some of the great prophecies that Acre shall be the white city where this new life should be shining. And it was so. And so he planted this thing on Mount Carmel. I want you to go and see these things, read these things for yourself. God passes by, the garden of this garden is so beautiful. But all I was going to bring is this. If Mount Carmel was a, all of it, was given by grant of the King Baldwin, the sovereign of the French Crusade, to the Carmelite brothers. And for 900 years they have been in the hands of the gentlemen. And besides worshipping God, show that he was immigrated considerably, and it was only rocks. There is a picture, and I asked Mr. Curtis Gavin, who's sitting there in the corner peacefully, is it possible to have a copy of that picture? It shows Mount Carmel in the year 1900, just at the time of the year, previous year, that Abdul Baha started to build the shrine over the bar there. There is not a tree, there is not a house, there is nothing but stones and stones and stones. And those of you who went to the pilgrimage in early days know how difficult it is to climb and pass over those stones in the forest of his by the means. Well, a miracle took place. The master, in his lifetime, after he was freed from prison in 1908, started to beautify his place. But of course, he was already elderly and not in good health, and yet he had a pressing problem of spreading the knowledge over the teachings throughout the world. And you know that in the years previous to the First World War, he undertook travels throughout the world. The first important one was he went to Egypt. Altogether 3 years. First to Egypt, then he went into Europe, to France, in England, and then he came to America. He spent 6 of the most beautiful, fruitful years of his life here, because he planted deeply the seeds of the course of Baha'u'llah, and we see that you are all the fruits of those seeds, all of you. And that he tried with his means he had at disposal. And you know, the one of the characteristics of the family of Baha'u'llah was poverty, dire poverty. With the means he had at disposal and satisfied himself, he started to beautify just the land around the tomb of the Baba when it was completed. You know, he was being arrested because they went and told the governor he was building a fortress well for the Germans and so on. And now, but when he was completed, he started to plant some trees, and he planted some flowers, and he planted some orange and lemon trees, and he planted tangerine, especially, and some jasmine. And this has remained for many, many years until this past. Now, Mr. Kelsey, who was there in 1921, just the day the master passed away, can tell you the way he looked up there. But surely Sandy had a one vision, I told you this morning, the prestige of the cause. He wanted to avoid what has happened to Christianity, what has happened to Islam. See, in the nice chair here, he's afraid of me, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I heard the short assembly many times, and the master was very conscious of that. Christianity has been neglected to the spiritual center for millennia, since the conquest of the Arabs, right to the art towards the end of the 6th century. We were abandoned, and everything now is today, up to today, everything is in a terrible situation. Even the church, which is built over the city, suppose, as they called it, it is coming apart, and is assured of a big thing that life is, and nobody is worrying to prepare. And the environment is a place where children of different Arab children and so on, of different, say, education play around, and all of that. Islam is even worse. There is no spiritual center of Islam. They have become both very political. The taking in hand the affairs of the nations, trying to influence with their religious biases the thought of the people. Well, anyhow, I don't want to say things that I might say tonight. Now, the social assembly in 1921, the first thing he did, Indian off there, the tribe will be in trial government. Because you get no pamphlet, no, any kind of literature, touristic or economic and so on, that there isn't the front cover that is in the Baha'i garden, so they call it the Baha'i temple, which is an altar temple, and so on, because it's one of the most beautiful things in the Middle East. There is nothing to be compared. Oh yes, there is a big pyramid in Egypt, but it isn't the same thing. And he started that way. I say it this way because, again, it's very lasting. Yesterday I mentioned that earlier in 1922, 1923, 1924, she extended the American French to contribute funds to purchase land on Mount Carmel so that they be air around these holy places. And of course, those days didn't do enough. With this, we could have bought the land for 100 costs of what you have to pay today to purchase land. And even now, you cannot purchase anymore because population in Israel is exploding by imports, that is, immigration, and by multiplication, massive multiplication, and they need housing all the time. And so they are building. And this is a quality of beauty. And besides being a spiritual horse, it's a great spiritual horse of the beauty of which the people of Israel are very proud. I don't know if I mentioned before that we have visitors every day in the number of 100, and our holidays they go over town, and they all are overcome by the beauty. Now, there is a reason. It isn't a natural beauty only that overtakes them. It is the spiritual potency of the consecrated spot that I was speaking to you this morning that makes a big, tremendous impression on them. I've seen many Orthodox Jews coming there with the appearance of a nonchalancery, what you would say, and people who just come to be curious, and then they have an accident. They have left that place with tears streaming from their eyes because they have been moved deeply. What is it that I don't know? It is something that is there. Myself, as being born in Italy and brought up in Italy, which is what you would call the cradle of the Christendom, and the Reverend might not agree because he is a Catholic center, but it doesn't matter. We have not found a feeling in any of these great temples in the Italy filled. You don't know. Well, you are overcome by the greatness, the beauty sometimes, the architectural mastery, the decoration of the paintings and so on, but there isn't any feeling that you get when you get into the Baha'i shrine. Now, Shirley Kendi, as I said before, had a very little moon, but he had a great inventive mind. Inventive not in the mechanical sense, that he could make gadgets and machines and so on and so on. Inventiveness was to apply the sense of beauty which was so highly developed in him to the beautification of the place at the minimum cost. This is something we have to learn, it's a lesson we have to learn, all of us. Having worked with him and for him for 9 years, a little bit more, if you want the fraction of a year. For 9 years I learned that economy, he was very, very severe with funds. He spent only what was absolutely indispensable and necessary, but to obtain the greatest effect from what he spent. In other words, every penny he spent was very wisely. Now, our dear friend Curtis Kerr, have to refer to him because of the note standby, told you the other day that he was the first one to put the electrical plant on Mount Carmel to light the shrine over the bar. It was a great adventure, I tell you, I assure you. It will be remembered for many years, even with built where living now in this system that I should pay so much and you get electricity in your house. And the water. The water was sent up to Mount Carmel from the house of the master, which is about 250 yards below the level, and at a distance of over a half kilometer. Well, I got it about to... four and a half to eight of a mile, and they had to go over. And you know, himself, he said it one night, he said, you know, I went around from place to place to buy pieces of pipes that are not all the same, but I could ever connect to them, so that I could bring the water down from the house of the master all the way up. And before the electricity was put there, you put to the second pump, he put a rotator pump in 1953, which was a godsend because soaked water very well is a vacuum pump, different than a piston pump. And they had put up a windmill. One of the windmills that rotates with the direction of the wind. The mill is still there, it's coming apart. It won't come apart because it is iron, but it's almost coming apart. Someday some water will let it remove. But he brought the water out. And you know, when you bring the water somewhere, you bring a miracle. With the water, everything gets green. And so he starts systematically to build it of the beautiful gardens. And as the land, it was possible to purchase more land, he did more miracles. And I wanted to assure you that he was instrumental, personally, to place all the trees, all the hedges, all the shrubs, all the flowers, all the beautification I have in the form of pilasters and fountains and birds, their leg birds, any eagle and everything, he did all, and lamppost, he did everything with his hands. He would not carry it himself, but he would never brought it up and he'd say, you put this here and you put it up there and dig it a hole here, and sometimes he would take it over himself and do the work and place it himself. Because he had this great vision of the future for the future. And he did not limit himself to Haifa only. Then he undertook to beautify Akka. Now, I want to make here a little diversion in saying that when the mother of Julia Khanum, May Maxwell, passed away in Argentina in 1939, Mr. Maxwell, at the request of the garden, was a dear old man who was the only daughter married to the garden, decided to move to Holy Land. And then the golden era of beautification started because of the two, the garden and the Maxwell had the same taste. Maxwell was a very fine artist. He was a fine architect, trained both in Canada and in France, as they both are, which is the most coveted degree anyone can get, but he had a mean taste for art. He was a beautiful watercolorist. I have one of his watercolors, which I treasure more than anything else, so lovely it is. And so the two worked together. Shoghi Effendi would express to him what his wishes were, and he would put it in paper and give a form. And so little by little, things started to be born, like the gate over the entrance to the garden of the Shrine of the Bar. It's a very beautiful gate. All the iron wrought work which you found everywhere. Those pilasters and columns, their designs, some are beautiful designs. Was Maxwell work. Then when the bodies of the family or the members of the family of Baha'u'llah are removed among Carmel. I mentioned that this morning. Then the other side of the, by the time they open the law for copying the Baha'i property, they open the road which is called today the United Nations, where it's very, very symbolic that it should be called the United Nations. It should be called the United Humanities. Well, that's what someday they change the name. And Mr. Maxwell did the decoration again, and he put two gates, two beautiful design gates, masonry work all around the road there. Now, by the way, the Israel government wanted to enlarge the road, has been pressing us to give a part of the land, which means to be able to destroy those things. And so far, we have not succeeded. So regretfully, because it is impossible. That is our permanent duty. They will have to do something, make maybe double decker roads up and down or something like that, but don't encroach on our property. And Mr. Maxwell started with the design for the shrine of the Baha'i. Shaka Effendi said it one day that those who have been on a pilgrimage, right back over the shrine of the Baha'i, there is a clump of cypress trees. They're very high now, a big fellow, huge one. And they were planted in the side where Baha'u'llah in 1891, say that's 73 years ago, said to Abdul Baha, this is the spot where the permanent tomb to the Baha'i should be built. And he said there must be something of an extraordinary beauty, of a rare beauty. That was Baha'u'llah's word. The guardian said so. And so the guardian told this to Mr. Maxwell, and Mr. Maxwell, being the fine artist he was, he got to work. And he made projects which were modified and adjusted and so on. And then he made the final project which was approved by the guardian with great joy. And there was one matter that he had to decide. Whatever to do should be green. In order to the lineage of the Baha'i, who was to say, yes, that is a descendant of Muhammad, and their color is green, or they should be gold. Well, the guardian thought the gold would be much better. It would be a great honor because it would make a true crown. And because those friends who are here, Persian, in what would mean Sukkot Carmel, it is the queen of the Mount Carmel. It's a real crown with me. And then we started this epopee of building this temple. There it was, I was driven in myself, or attracted, or drafted, I should never say. Drafted in this work, which lasted nearly 9 years. And it was the most happy years of my life. Nothing I had done before was worthwhile. Nothing I shall go do after is worthwhile. Exactly what I did for the guardian, to help him in building up these gems. But the honor of the prophet, and in the meantime, they are restored to the eye. And therefore, one day we got the I don't want to. How much time do I have? All I want. Till tomorrow morning? Fine. Until you get tired, all right. When you're tired, when you prepare to me, you raise your hand and say, we can't stand it any longer. You do that? Okay. Now, one morning I got a telegram, and he said, Mr. Maxwell has come to see you. That's from the high court, but he's not offended. Mr. Maxwell has come to see you. Well, the become face of the Czechoslovakia, waiting crossing to Hooligan. I should mind the Czechoslovakia way of bringing armament to someone, but that is my own consideration. And so, we waited day after day, this plane never arrived. And then finally one morning, from nowhere, there was the knowledge that the plane was coming, and I was, it was very funny because I thought that the landing agent here, and I made him rush to the airport. I said, the plane is coming in 1 hour. I got some information on a wireless of some kind, that I had one of these instruments that I could pick up all kinds of information. And it was a Norwegian plane flying. Well, we all rushed at the airport at 3 o'clock in the morning. It was the month of April. The weather was good, but the poor sailor arrived there at the plane and didn't come until about 9 or 10 in the morning. But anyhow, then Mr. Maxwell came, and when he came after the first embraces and greetings, he said to me, I'm coming here because the Guardian wants to start the construction and embellishment of the shrine over the block. And he thought that the only thing he would do, the Guardian at the time, were to buy a set of the columns. Those who have seen them, they are columns of granite now. Well, I am not going to detail. It was a difficult job. Hitler was trying to recover. I just started to recover from a disastrous war. We had been ravaged by all the troops, friendly and enemies. There was nothing left in Italy. We had practically no electricity, we had no water, we had no food, we had nothing. Least to speak about the construction material, which was drafted in building homes and public edifices and railroad stations and bridges which had been destroyed by the war. So nothing was available. And I thought at one moment, my dear, what shall we do here? And Mr. Maxwell, who knew the Guardian better, I did not write to the Guardian yet, I knew him voluntary correspondent, said, you know, the Guardian wants this and that, and he wants to do it in a few months. Well, that was a wonderful news. And so we started to work, and we went around. Then we went around and we found a first thing to do, he was speaking about models. Well, models, the Italy is the land of the models. It's like pebbles in the sand there. You can get the thousands and millions of them. Which type of a model do you want? Well, Maxwell knew what he wanted, exactly what he wanted. So I say, let us go to the Geological Institute of the University. They have all the samples of the stone and marbles you could think of. So there we went. And he selected the two types of marble that would be suited. And then we started again our quest to find out where we can obtain that. Well, we found out that the quarries had been blasted off during the war because they became heavens for the German troops and so on and so on. So you couldn't use them. I went to speak to the owners and they said, oh well, we never to reestablish the efficiency of the East, but it will cost so much money, and we didn't have much money, and it will take so many months, and the government said months. Well, I don't know what it was, but still, miraculously, very miraculously, we were able to get some information about a quarry which was going to be opened in a few weeks. You know, Italy needed the economy to be reestablished on a sort of basis. And export were the only thing which would bring foreign currency and reestablish the economy. I'm going to shorten this. And so we got the information and we sent a telegram to these people, and they came, and they were very lovable persons. They understood immediately what we want. Among them was an architect who was small of a size, but the main rocker who was arrested, remained our most steadfast friends. think since that day he has been come to every Nadu celebration we have ever had. He's not a Baha'i because his wife is not very, very sympathetic with the Baha'i cause. But him, that doesn't matter. He was a great friend, and he gave us the untold help in securing the materials and stuff for the work. And we have this work going on for several years. Well, Mr. Maxwell went back. These people came. You may find a reference to this in volume 12 over the Baha'i World. There is an article I wrote, a rapid one, to give the idea what took place. And we worked, and I started to work all over the day, and sometime I passed over the evenings and nights to see this work carried through. And Mr. Maxwell went back, and the guardian had said that whatever work was done in Italy, all the carvings, models should be made of the clay, and photographs should be sent to the models, and he would approve, disapprove, or change them. And therefore, that's what we thought. And we sent to the place, they have a beautiful capital, they have a Corinthian capital, which are lovely. Beautiful they are. They are a copy of the classic one, and so on. And he would approve. And then there are some panelings to be placed with it, and so on. And then there are balustrades and so on, and pinions of the balustrades, all that work. And then one day I came to the guard and he said, "No more need of approvals. Go ahead." Which meant I could use my judgment, and there was another 10 tons of responsibility added to my shoulder, but I doubled my attention and my interest in work. We worked for years to do that. Oh, we had to go and get the columns are made of a pink granite. It's very beautiful granite. And it is in the very, the party are on the very top of mountains which are between Italy and Switzerland, and a mountain is called Mount Rosa. It's like Mont Blanc. Thank you so much. Mount Rosa is like Mont Blanc, one of the highest mountains in the chain of the Alps. And the parties in general are at the foot of the mountain. This instead was at the top of the mountain. And what was to bring these huge blocks down, it was a problem, a technical problem that they had to overcome with all the difficulties they were. But it was done. And when the first column arrived, and the first column was erected, the shortest thing is in the most beautiful table. He was overjoyed. Now I tell you, these were the joys we could share. These are the joys we could bring to him. He was overjoyed. I think he went over and over again and looked at them and looked at them and looked at them, and he never ended to admire them. And when they later on pilgrims started to come, no, pilgrims were already coming. He would say, "Go and see what they are doing. Go and look at the beauty. Look at that." And so by the time the first the colonnade was erected, he decided he could not leave the building that way. It was his plan to make a colonnade and look at that. Then he became feverishly interested, like I was, to finish the work. And so, it was a race between financial distress and time and work and dreams and so on, and it worked. It worked beautifully. And by the Nauruz of 1953, it was completed. Just before the conference in Chicago where the Royal Family came and represented the garden, or went, I should say. I wasn't there. Went to represent the garden. I was the only one of the hands who did not come because I could not go. I had too much work in Italy. Besides that, there were iron grates, beautiful balustrades made of wrought iron, and all all kinds of things, all the material necessary for construction, as a timber for scaffolding, iron for reinforcing the concrete, even nails to make the shutterings for the casting of the concrete, everything had to be sent from Italy. The difficulty we had were tremendous. I say I had because it was single-handed. I have no help except my wife. But the contact with the authorities, I had to do it myself. And the Italy was on a regime of a recovery. Everything was frozen. Everything needed a permit. License, export license. You know if you have had any experience like that. It's something which is excruciating. You know, day after day, week after week, and the answer is yet. No. Well, anyhow, we overcome all these difficulties. And should have been on the other side of the invisible wire was anxious to see the thing grow or not. And he was sending telegrams and requests. And we had many calamities like a flood which destroyed some of the dikes, electricity ended in some parts of Italy, they could not work any longer. Other calamities are the strikes and the or storms which prevented the ships to leave the shore and so on and so on. Conclusion was that in the period of 4 years, in 17 different ships, we sent all the material to build the shrine of the Baal. Now, I wanted to dispel a misunderstanding there is in the world. The shrine was not built in Haifa. Shrine was built in Italy. It was erected in Italy in sections, not together because it would have been impossible, that we need a foundation and so on. But we say 1/8 at the time of every 4 levels were built in Italy. With all finished completely. And dear master had given me a standard. I said to him, what should be the distance between one stone and another? He took a piece of paper out of his pocket. And it was I never forgotten, a postal card, a Canadian postal card, the one in the post office postal card. He said, a postal card like this should not go through. That was the standard. So you can see the perception. Between stones and stones, between the sideways and the horizontal, vertical, and so on. And so this is the way it was. So the work was completed, packed in cases, and shipped to the Holy Land. They were the master plans, it's like a puzzle. The master plans indicated the position of every stone, and every stone had a number painted in the back with indelible material, and then there was a corresponding number in the plan. So when the maintenance gather these things, all they have to do, found out the case of 17, and they found piece 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, they get it out, and they go and put it into location. And this is the way it was done. It was a wonderful work. I think it is the only one thing that was done like this, I was told, and it is some kind of a cloister that exists in New York, which Mr. Rockefeller bought from a French chateau and brought it over and in pieces like that. But this was already built that way, but we had to build it and have all the allowances for stress and measures and so on. And so it went. Now, there are some episodes that are interesting, like how the hand of the dog sometime, or I would say most of the time, is to protect anyone who works for him. And it was one occasion we were ready to ship some